Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for September 10th. What day of the week are we on? Friday? It's all getting lost already. We're a couple weeks into the semester. The football team is now 2 weeks in, and with me are a couple of football writers who are going to try to do better than they did against Miami of Ohio. We got Tyler Jett.
Hey, how you doing?
And Anthony Chang.
Hey, guys. I'm going to try not to drop the ball like the Gators did last week.
Yeah, they dropped the ball quite a bit, which is actually the first thing I want to talk about. The biggest mistake that was made over and over again last week was definitely Mike Pouncey putting the ball on the ground. With the Bulls coming up, everybody said they can't afford to play like they did last week, obviously, if they expect to win. What do you think the chances are that Pouncey puts a few on the ground this week? Like, do you think it's going to be totally over? Do you think that it could happen? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be in his head. I mean, obviously, he's not good at snapping the ball. We saw that in the spring. I mean, we've talked about it a lot already. We've talked about it ad nauseum. We've written about it ad nauseum. And I think it's to the point where it's really a mental thing as much as a physical thing. And if he does it once, he's going to do it three or four times. And, I mean, I can see it happening over and over again, honestly.
Yeah, I kind of agree where I don't think it's going to happen as much as it happened in week one. But, I mean, that's something that if he has problems snapping the ball, it's going to show up week to week. So no matter if he has a towel on his waist, if he's holding the ball on the top of now, I mean, it's still going to happen, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny because one of the changes, they pointed to three things. It was, the towel?
The stiff wrist,
yeah. And then holding the ball up higher. Yeah.
But if you didn't know they were talking about snapping, you'd be kind of confused as to what they were discussing.
But I think the photo that we used in one of the stories we ran about him against Miami of Ohio, he had a towel on his pocket. Yes. So, once again, we're just totally lied to about everything.
And underneath the photo we had, Mike Pouncey is going to try to wear a towel this game.
Yeah,
that was great.
We were going to put that, and we were like, well, he has a towel on in the photo. So
right. So I think what they didn't want to say is that it's all mental, which is exactly what it is. Because, Mike, I think I said this on the podcast last week, if they asked him to snap it left-handed with nobody around, he could probably do it 100 times out of 100. It's just once you get one or two bad snaps, he's probably thinking about it. But I do think it's interesting that the coaching staff and Pouncey has just been like, it's not going to happen again. Don't worry about it. But they don't really have any, you're not going to know until it happens. And it'll be interesting to see if he puts a couple on the ground, do they stick with him or do they pull him? And what would you guys do in that situation?
Do you think that they will, move away from the shotgun this game just to avoid that?
That's a good question, too. We can talk about that. I don't know. I don't think they're going to want to change their game plan any more than they have to. But, I mean, if he really can't snap the ball out of the shotgun and they feel better putting him under center, maybe they will. I don't know.
I think this is the game. If he messes up again, I think you're going to see Sam Roby, the backup center, start to play there. They'll move Pouncey back to guard where he played last year. Mm-hmm. Their whole offense is in the shotgun for the most part. They have a little bit of an I formation package, but I can't see them possibly completely changing their offense to accommodate a center.
So do you think they would go to Sam Roby in the middle of the game, if it comes to that, or do you think it will be they'll ride it out this week and then if they might need to go to Sam Roby next week?
If he botches two or three snaps by halftime, I think Roby's out there to start the second half.
Okay.
I think they ride it out. I think they make the switch right before they begin SC play. They don't go to Tennessee with Mike Pouncey if he botches a couple snaps this week as well. So I'll say they ride it out this game, but before week three, they switch him.
What if he messes up early? They ride it out throughout the game? South Florida's not
team. I just don't envision him miss snapping four balls in the first half.
Was it just one?
That's a cutoff.
I don't know. I think with one, they won't pull them. I mean, if it gets bad, it's four or five in the first half, maybe. But I don't think I don't think they would embarrass him like that.
Right. I could see both sides of it. I mean, also, you're putting Sam Roby in a weird position where he's going to have to just come in and be expected to, perform right away. I could see them leaving him in. I could see them making the switch in the middle of the game. I guess it'll depend. It'll probably depend on how much it's affecting the outcome of the game. Right. Like, if it's a close game and it's because Mike Pouncey can't snap the ball, maybe they make the change. But if they feel like they can win while he's sucking, maybe they leave him in. I don't know.
Okay, I would say one thing is I think Sam Roby probably will be prepared to come in have a through game. He's a backup center. If you're a backup and you're not prepared to come in the middle of a game, what's the point of having you there? Two, I don't think they're going to worry that much about embarrassing Mike Pouncey in a football game. I mean, they have to win the game. It's the bottom line. And we were saying four or five snaps gets ridiculous. I would say two or three snaps gets ridiculous, and that can set your offense back a lot. I think four or five is almost disastrous.
I just feel like they would want to avoid, by any means necessary, pulling him middle of the game. Like, that's the, we all said that's a leader of the offense, maybe the leader of this team. To pull him out and maybe put, switch positions because he's having trouble with the snaps in the middle of a game, I think would kind of send a message to the team where it would kind of hurt Mike Pouncey a little bit.
I agree. I mean, you would hope that he can be like the leader everybody says he is and just realize, like, look, this is nobody's fault but my own. Like, yeah. I moved myself off center by being horrible, not like they had it out for me and I'm going to get... Which also leads me to the next point. It's stupid to waste him at center if he's screwing up because he's a good guard. You know? It just seems ridiculous to leave him in there and let him be mediocre at center when you could shift him over a spot and he's very, very good, like an All-American caliber guard. They're really weakening themselves at two position at center where you're leaving him in, and then whoever's filling in at guard that would, like James Wilson or Ian Silberman or whoever you have to put in off the bench. So
yeah, maybe tell me you have two Carl Johnsons at guard, then okay. But you have James Wilson, who was a backup last year most of the time. You know, you could put him in that spot and then put Roby at center. So
yeah, and the offensive line as a whole played pretty bad last week. I thought Marcus Gilbert was the one guy who graded out as a champion. He seemed to do fine.
For what that's worth.
Right, for what that's worth. But he seemed to do fine. But I think, you know, I think we all agree that Mo Hurt really struggled at right tackle last week. And it's interesting because Meyer said that Xavier Nixon, who started at left tackle at a few games last year and is primarily a tackle, is ready to go this week. So they could conceivably let him play left tackle, move Marcus Gilbert back to right tackle, or if you like Gilbert at left tackle, just put Nixon at right tackle. But they said that's not necessarily the case, and we could get Mo Hurt again out there. Does that make sense to you guys?
It makes sense to me that they could do that. I think what was interesting was yesterday when Meyer was talking to the media, and he said, you know, Xavier's ready to go, we're excited about it, he's good to go. The only thing I heard mentioned was right tackle. I didn't hear the words left tackle mentioned.
Right, which is...
Did you hear that? I thought I heard right tackle.
No, so when somebody asked him the question, they asked about right tackle for sure, which is kind of interesting.
And he didn't correct them either.
Right.
So
I don't know.
I mean, I think it just shows that maybe Nixon just isn't ready yet. I mean, he's just come back from the injury. Maybe he is healthy, but you need to be plugged into that left tackle. That's a very important position. I mean, maybe you want a week for him just to get some work under his belt, you know?
And they get Carl Johnson back from suspension, presumably this week. I don't know if anybody finalized whether or not he's good to... He took care of all his off-the-field business, but presumably he'll be back playing guard, so the line should look a lot better this week than it did last week.
When you hear Carl Johnson talk, is it hard for you to believe that he's someone that's getting in trouble very much? Because he just talks like this all the time. I don't know. Man. I don't try not to think too much out there. I just try to have fun. Like, I just can't see that guy off the field starting beating people up and stuff. I don't know. Like, we don't know what the problem was. But, like, it surprises me how many character issues he has based on his voice, which may be a completely ridiculous thing. But do you agree when you hear him talk, you don't think this is a guy who's getting in trouble a lot?
Well, I mean, because he's mostly a nice guy when you talk to him. Like, he's pretty affable and, like, he likes talking to the media and he's a funny guy. So you don't expect him to be out there, you know, messing stuff up. But I don't know. At the same time, like, he could still be irresponsible. I don't pretend to know Carl Johnson, so.
I'm just saying, man, funny people usually don't have anger. Usually just funny.
Well, who knows? I mean, this last suspension, we don't really know what he got suspended for. So
maybe for being too funny.
That was probably...
He was making too many jokes in the locker room.
He was probably showing up Ahmad Black, taking over as the funniest guy. He didn't like that.
Too friendly to the media, probably.
Yeah, that's another thing that they'll probably suspend their players for. Other than that, Jordan Reed could be... They said he could be coming back, I think, right? At tight end.
Yeah.
Not for sure one way or the other. Any other injury news? Brandon Hicks, I think, is in a splint now instead of the cast that he played in last week, so that's kind of an upgrade for him. But other than that, it's going to be pretty much the same guys out there. The offensive line is Will Hill's back from suspension, also at safety, which will only help them.
Right.
Josh Evans, again,
didn't
do
look
a
great.
Whole lot
I mean,
last week.
It's hard to judge. I mean, it's hard to judge, especially when you're watching the whole game. To really judge every player, you really have to watch game film, and we don't have that kind of access. So it is kind of difficult to judge exactly how they did. And Meyer defended him and said he thought Josh Evans did good. But the few plays that we noticed him on weren't positive plays.
Right. And the other big injury thing, obviously, is Moses Jenkins is out for 6 weeks. So Jeremy Brown will be playing that second corner spot. And Matt Elam presumably will be the nickel guy. Now, what could get interesting is Jeremy Brown's also been fighting an ankle injury. So if he's down, we don't know if it's going to be Josh Shaw, Jalen Watkins, or is there a third guy I'm forgetting?
No, those are the two guys I've been mentioned.
So it'll probably be one of those guys that'll have to step in. You might get your first look at one of those two freshmen. Anything else about... Well,
there was also defensive tackle Teron Sanders is coming back to add some depth to that. So.
Right, which is... that's a big addition for them. He's a guy who's experienced.
Right.
So USF comes in here. I wrote my feature kind of about this, the kickoff, just where they fit in the state scheme of college football with the other big programs. How do you guys see this program now? Do you think they've made a lot of headway in the last few years? And what's this program ceiling, kind of, I guess?
Well, I think, first of all, any school that's in a power conference in the state of Florida is going to be a good team. There's too many good recruits for this team not to work out, and you're playing in the Big East. That's helping them. The fact that they made it to number two in the BCS back in, like, 2007, I believe, or was it 2007, really, really helps the team. And obviously, that shows that they have a potential to be a good team and has the potential to compete for a national championship. I don't think they're going to get there. I think their ceiling is probably still a second-tier team, mm-hmm. at least for now. I don't know if there's room for four good teams. I think part of the fact that they were able to do so well in the past was because FSU and Miami were down a little bit. I think both those teams are kind of coming back. And, I mean, I like South Florida. I think they have a good coach, but I still think they're probably going to end up being a second-tier team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, they had that one good year, but they just have to show – to be on that level with Miami, FSU, UF, they have to show consistency. And I don't even know if there's room for three good teams in Florida. Like, if you look in the past – 5-10 years, you see Florida's been dominating, FSU's been down, Miami's kind of been there. I mean, I don't know if there's room for those three really, really good Florida teams anymore. So mm-hmm. even four for USF, that's going to be tough for them to make room for them.
I think there's definitely room for three. You're right, though, in the fact that it's been a while since all three have been good at the same time. But I think the main problem is just, are there enough high-profile recruits to go around for mm-hmm. all of them? And there's probably only enough for the three big schools. You don't see USF pulling like five stars away from these schools. So I think until they can start doing that, and also they're not the type of program who's going to be able to recruit out of state. So like they right. can get like mm-hmm. the good second tier Florida prospects, but like Florida's pulling in Ronald Powell from California and, you know, these kids from all over the country. So it's a situation where they're not on that level yet for recruiting.
I think what we're talking about, when I said second tier, I should define that as that's a team that's good enough, I think, to win the Big East. And right. a team that's good enough, if you do that, you go into BCS bowl games, and that's very good. Like, there's right. no one that's going to be sad with only reaching BCS bowl games. I think that's the kind of potential they have.
Agreed.
Well, the Big East is a second tier conference, so. Right.
Well, they're going to BCS bowl games, yeah. regardless, and you're getting paid if you're going to BCS bowl games. So people are going to be pretty pumped about that.
To go back to the thing about not having room for the three good Florida teams, I think that now the fact that more schools outside of Florida are recruiting heavily in this state, it kind of hurts that. It used to be the fact where Miami had South Florida, you had Gainesville had, you know, a little bit of South Florida, Central Florida, but now you have USC, Ohio State, you know, all these schools, Georgia, coming in here and pulling some kids, that kind of takes away from the pool from the right. pick out of.
Yeah, and I wrote this in the feature today, like BJ Daniels really the perfect kind of like he epitomizes the type of kid that that USF is going to go after and hopefully build their program around. He was a four-star recruit out of Tallahassee, right under FSU's nose. FSU didn't go after him because of other quarterbacks they had in the roster. Maybe they didn't think he was good enough. None of the other programs really made a hard push for him, so that was a guy they were able to, you know, swoop in there and kind of scoop him up. And those are the type of kids that they kind of have to build around, which I think you can build a good program around those type of kids. I mean, Tyler said second tier, and that's definitely true. They're kind of in like a weird in-between tier where they're not as good as the big three schools, but they're not like a UCF or someone right. like that. You know, like they're definitely a program that, like Tyler said, they could make a BCS game. They could win the Big East. They haven't won the Big East in their history, but I don't think any of us would be shocked if that happened in the next 2-3 years under Skip Holtz.
I just think it's hard to build a program around kids like BJ Daniels where he turned out well, but you're getting these kids who slip through the cracks. They might not, they're hit or miss. You might have one guy that's good, one guy that's not as good, you know. It's hard to build a program around kids that you don't know are going to be like those like superstar athletes.
I would say South Florida is a program that represents exactly why I think college football is so interesting, is the fact that a school like that is a little bit disadvantaged and they kind of have to find kind of market inefficiencies. And that's what they did with BJ Daniels. He's a kid that if FSU wants him, they could have had him. But he was a little bit overlooked by FSU. South Florida scoops him up. He works out well. Of course, it's harder to win that way. But when you win that way, it's way more interesting to me.
Right. But, I mean, how many programs across the nation can just go get almost any kid they want? Like, there are some. Like, maybe 10, 15. Like, I
wouldn't even put it that high.
Right. I mean, there's, like, the three Florida schools, Oklahoma, Texas, USC.
Maybe Ohio State.
Ohio State, definitely.
I wouldn't even put all three Florida schools in there. I put Florida in there. I don't think Miami can get any kid they want.
They're getting top recruiting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like top five recruiting classes. Yeah. They're capable of getting top five recruiting classes. Consistent top five recruiting classes.
Right. Yeah. LSU can do it.
LSU. So there's maybe like 10 or 15 schools. I mean, after that, you're – so USF, if they're not one of those 10 or 15, it's not really a huge indictment on them. You know, and a lot of programs, a lot of good programs like Cincinnati in recent years, Boise State – even a school like maybe Oregon State out there, like they have to build the same way USF's building.
Nah, that's a good point, but I think it's all relative. You see, all these three schools are in those schools you mentioned, so it's gonna be tough for them to get on that same level.
Right.
I just see them always being that fourth school.
Okay.
Kind of being a little bit behind the three. Maybe one year, maybe 1 or 2 years, it'll be a little better than one of the three, but not consistently. Okay. Just because of that fact.
So you think that no point. Do they have a chance to move into that level?
Like I said, I think they might have some better seasons than them, like sporadically, but I don't think consistently they can move onto their level.
Yeah, I guess part of it actually comes down to financing as well. If you win a couple of years and all of a sudden your program gets that BCS dollars coming in, you win the Big East, whatever, right. All of a sudden maybe you get a little more booster support. Maybe that kind of helps your program. And if you have nice facilities, that becomes easier to recruit kids. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, then you can get on the level playing field. I don't think we look at financial situations with each school enough as far as what kind of an advantage that puts to a school.
Right.
Florida has great facilities, which I think is a huge factor, along with great coaching and winning tradition. That's a huge factor as to why they can get kids. And South Florida can build that, but it'll take time.
Well, I know that Miami does not have good facilities. Like, they don't put as much money into the football program as Florida and probably FSU. So that's something that they are at a disadvantage too. It's just you just have to build the brand. I think is more. I mean, finances definitely has something to do with it, but I think it's more about the brand and the reputation.
Yeah, and that takes a while to build. USF. I mean, we definitely need to mention their first year of football at any level was 1997, which is outrageous. I mean, we put a graphic on the front page of the Wrap today, and it had what year they all started their football programs, and FSU was the latest of the big three, and that was 1947. So you're talking about a 50-year difference between USF and the last of the big three to start a football program. So they still have a lot of room, a lot of time. And I think something else that may affect this, I don't know if you guys agree, if we hit conference realignment, you kind of don't know which way things are going to shake out and which teams are going to move where. They have a chance where maybe they're, you know, the Big East right now is clearly probably the worst one or two BCS conferences. That might always be the case going forward, or USF might not always stay in the Big East. So.
Right. You really don't know. That's one thing I think we learned this summer with conference realignment is you don't know what's going to happen as far as who will end up where. I mean, I would have never thought that Colorado would jump to the Pac-10. I never thought Pac-10 would have a chance to get what they almost had.
Right.
And also going back to the conference realignment before that, when Miami jumped over to the ACC, I never would have thought a program like South Florida would be able to jump up as quickly as it did, and the fact that they went to the Big East helped them so much, and you just don't know. Like, if something happens somehow, South Florida ends up in the SEC or the ACC somehow, all of a sudden they jump up again.
Right, because, I mean, like Tyler said, it's just all getting driven by money. So, like, scenarios that we never thought would happen almost happened. Like, you almost had Texas and Oklahoma going to the Pac-10, which makes no sense geographically or rivalry-wise or makes no sense on any level except money-wise. So when
South Florida could go to the Pac-10 next year. You really don't know. I love the Pac-10 commissioner.
USF, they might get them confused with San Francisco out there. Who knows what will happen? But, yeah, I mean, I think conference realignment could be a situation where it really shakes up college football as a whole very soon, and then you don't really know what's going to happen with schools like this. But USF comes in here. What do we really know about them? I know it's not a lot because they don't get a lot of national publicity. But just their program the last few years and who's on the team this year, who to watch for, anything that fans should know about USF coming to the Swamp.
I mean, I know they've lost a lot of guys to NFL draft, to graduation, so they're pretty young. They come in as a pretty young team. Obviously, they're led by B.J. Daniels, who had a great freshman year. I think he had over 1,000 rushing yards and like almost 2,000 passing yards in his freshman season. That's pretty good. And I mean, just their youth, and B.J. Daniels is what I think is the main thing to know about them right now.
Right, yeah, and I think Skip Holtz obviously brings a big component to this. Levitt did a really good job for that. He's the only coach that the program ever had until this season. He left kind of amid scandal, but they turned the program over to Skip Holtz, who did really well at ECU, came off of back-to-back Conference USA championships there, obviously comes from a great coaching family and lineage, so I don't think you can really have a better hire than they did as far as their status is concerned. Like, guys that were available to them, they probably did about as good as they could.
Yeah, it takes something to win as an underdog, or to win or be one of the have-not kind of teams and be successful. And Skip Holtz has done that before. And South Florida, he's got a lot more resources at South Florida than he did at ECU. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years.
And I think it poses a challenge to the Gators that they have a new coach, just because you've seen all the coaches talking about they don't know what to expect. They have a bunch of different assistant coaches, a different head coach, new players. It's just going to be like they've been having to study other, like multiple teams just to get ready for this game. So that's something to look out for too.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because the coaching staff has, you know, just got put together and stuff like that. They're watching tape off of teams from, you know, different schools, yeah, and different 5 years ago, 10 years ago, just to get kind of what to expect in the scheme. So it's not as easy as, you know, pop in a tape of a team that's been running the same system for 10 years and go to work. So I think USF may have a chance to catch them off guard with some things. If they play loose and creative, you know, like if they have nothing to lose and they bust out a couple interesting plays, who knows what'll happen.
I think the worst thing for South Florida, though, is the fact that Florida played so bad last week.
I agree with that point, too.
If Florida had played good and coasted past a MAC team coming off a 1-11 season, I think Florida may overlook them, but because they played so bad, just awful, I think that they know they can't afford to go out there and just lay an egg again.
Yeah, I agree. I can't see them putting on the same performance they had in the first game. So that's probably the worst thing the Bulls could have asked for.
Oh, I can see them putting on a bad performance again. I just think that they're going to be ready for South Florida. From perspective of being prepared,
right,
I think they're going to be more prepared than they would have been had they played well last week.
I agree with that 100%. I think that this is a game they're going to be more motivated for, where they had a chance to really come in and just overlook this team. But if South Florida wins, they will be 1-0 all time against Florida and FSU. What do you guys think about that? What do you think about South Florida starting to become a team that maybe these teams play more often, at least?
I would like to see them play more often. I'm surprised, honestly, that Florida even scheduled them, because they are a respectable team, and Florida almost never does that in non-conference games. I'm sorry, it's just look at the last couple of schedules, they haven't. Yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting. I think if South Florida wins, I would love to see what would happen after South Florida won this game and see how Florida reacts, and does Florida schedule them more because they lost that game? I think they could. I think they'd be kind of upset that they just lost to the little brother.
I think they schedule them less. I just don't think,
you think they'd be scared.
I think they learned their lesson and just schedule cupcakes from now on like they have been.
Right. I could see both sides of that. If I were a USF fan and my team was 1-0 against FSU and UF, I would talk so much crap. I know they did in 2007 when it was totally unwarranted and they beat Auburn and nobody else from in-state except for UCF, and they were saying they were the best team in Florida. But if I went on the road and beat both of those teams and then they were too scared to reschedule me, I would talk all kinds of crap.
And think about recruiting-wise, what that would do for the coaches at South Florida. If they won this game and then Florida didn't schedule them again, and then they kept challenging Florida to schedule them, if I'm South Florida, I'd go public with that and say, hey, we keep trying to schedule them, they won't challenge us or whatever,
right,
and then tell recruits that same thing. That would be the worst thing for Florida, in my opinion.
And we should know, that's an interesting point. We should know, too, that they've played Miami twice and lost both times. So they're not exactly, you know, undefeated.
They're not running the whole state.
Yeah, exactly. But I think USF will definitely become a team that gets scheduled more often. Like, not every year, but I think maybe every year from here on out, maybe they play one of the three schools or something like that.
It seems like they play one of the three schools every year. So that's something I think they intend to do, if it's possible.
Okay, so definitely adding into the mix. The other thing is the spread for this game is, it opened at 17 and it's moved down as far as 15, I think I've seen it. What do you expect as far as the nature of the game? Do you expect it to be close? Do you think USF has a legitimate chance to come in here and win?
Yeah, I think that UF's offense is going to have a lot of success this week, which sounds kind of weird off of the Miami Ohio performance, but when I was writing something on USF, they lost like six of their top seven tacklers from last year. They have a bunch of newcomers on defense. I just don't see that unit coming into the Swamp and stopping this Florida offense. So I think the offense will have a lot of success this week, and they'll put up a big number.
Yeah, I really don't know, and this is not to be offensive to South Florida fans, but I think that whether it's close or it's a blowout is going to be dependent on how good Florida does, and that's really it.
That's fair. I think if Florida plays its best game, USF can't beat them, so they'll definitely need a few mistakes. And I also don't think that South Florida can score on Florida with regularity. Like, I think they could put up 21 or 24, but I don't think they're going to hang 35 in the Swamp. So I think it's on Florida's offense a little bit. I mean, if Florida's offense goes out there and rolls to 35, 40 points, I don't think USF can score with them. But if they struggle again and they only end up with, you know, 17, 20 points, we're going to definitely see a game.
Well, how do you see the defense preventing B.J. Daniels? How do you see them containing him? Or
I think if B.J. Daniels wants to have success, he has to establish his arm early. Because you know Florida's not going to let him beat them running the ball. It's way too simple for B.J. Daniels to run on you. I think your focus is to stop him from running and make him beat you with the arm. And Florida's defense backfield is very good. They played well last week, four interceptions, or three from the defensive backs and one from the linebacker, John Bostic. And I think if they can shut him down throwing the ball, then they'll be fine. If B.J. Daniels can get to a good start with his arm, you never know what's going to happen. Because he can use his legs after he gets you respecting his arm.
Our Alligator Sports recruiting writer, Tom Green, posed a question to me where he asked, when was the last time Florida faced a dual-threat quarterback like B.J. Daniels? And I really can't think of a time
where Troy Smith in the national championship game. Yeah, he
wasn't like B.J. Daniels.
No, yeah. Somebody asked Urban Meyer this in the press conference, was saying how like Florida's never really gotten lit up by a dual threat guy. But I can't remember a bunch of dual threat guys they've played. And Troy Smith gets a little typecast because he's black, honestly, because he wasn't a guy that was running for a ton of yards for them. Maybe 300 or 400 yards he stacked up that year. But that was Meyer's answer. He did point to Troy Smith, but I just don't think that he was the same kind of runner that B.J. Daniels is going to be.
Yeah, it's a different class. They're both mobile quarterbacks, but it's a different class. I remember, obviously, Jay Cutler wasn't a mobile quarterback, but I remember him having success against Florida way back. This is almost irrelevant at this point because there's nobody on that team that was there. But the coaching staff, or Meyer, was still there. And I remember Jay Cutler having some success on the ground, actually.
I agree. And also, what I thought of when he asked me the question was, they did face Tebow for the last 4 years. I mean, he's not the runner that B.J. Daniels is, but there is still something to be said about that. They did face him in practice for the last 3-4 seasons. So.
That's interesting. Also, I remember Matt Flynn actually had a couple really big runs against them when they lost to LSU on the road in 2007. But, I mean, we're really Harrison just pointed out Ryan Perilou also, who also ran for a touchdown in that same game in 2007. So probably LSU did the most damage to them using their quarterbacks to run. But that was 3 years ago.
Right, it's so hard to tell.
It's a different team. It's not even the same guys. Yeah. So who really knows what to expect out of there? I think B.J. Daniels, though, he's going to need to take care of the ball, first of all, not make any stupid mistakes. And then I really think the way you beat a defense like Florida's is you have to hit the big plays when they're there. Like, you'll probably get 2 or 3 chances to make a big play, and if you negate it with a penalty or you overthrow a receiver or something like that, you're not going to get the points you would. Like, you kind of look at the games where they've gotten into trouble on the at home. You've had, you know, a Ole Miss receiver, I forget the kid's name, Hodge.
When Major Wright messed up.
Right, going for 80 yards. When Arkansas gave him a scare last year, they had a couple big plays. Greg Childs went for a huge, like, 70-yard touchdown or something like that. So I think that's the way you beat Florida, is you have to capitalize when they make a mistake. So I think if B.J. Daniels can make a couple big plays, then they'll have a chance to win. But I don't think you're going to move the ball consistently on this team.
And I also think they'll test Jeremy Brown early, his ankle. I mean, they're gonna go at him because when you have Janoris on the other side, and you have Jeremy Brown with an ankle injury, I mean, they're gonna go at him early and test him. So I think that'll be an interesting matchup to watch and see if, you know, he could keep up.
And if we're talking about athletes too, I mean, the guys who you would expect to whose job would most be to contain him would probably be the defensive ends. And if Duke Lemons isn't the most athletic guy, like, do you think we might see some more Ronald Powell this week?
Lord knows I hope so. I love watching Ronald Powell play. I think we said last week, like, who would have thought that the mental problem would be, or it wouldn't be a mental problem for him, it'd be a physical problem when he just got beat bad on, he got mossed and thrown down on a fake punt. But you just look at him, and he's so athletic, and I would love to see what happens if you could put Powell on the field and really have him chasing down B.J. Daniels.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a good chance that we see something like that. But, I mean, their linebackers, they've said all offseason that their linebackers are so fast, the fastest they've ever been, and that's their strength. So, I mean, now it's the time to show that because you're getting a guy where you're going to have to chase him around the field and play contain.
I think Jelani Jenkins would be really fun to watch him as well. He was recruited for, I mean, his big plus tool, if you want to use the baseball term, would be his speed when he came in here.
I was going to say, do you think they'll put Jelani Moore at middle linebacker for that role? Do you think that they might use him more than Bostic this game?
I have no idea because the coaches are never honest with us because I think one of the writers asked Durkin, the linebacker coach, you know, are you going to spy B.J. Daniels? Mm-hmm. And his response was, who am I going to spy him with, man? Like, B.J. Daniels is awesome. and the writer's like, Jelani Jenkins? And he's like, this guy's just, like, too fast. Like, he was acting like none of his players
could match up with
the great B.J. Daniels, which is total BS. So whatever they're actually going to do, they did not let us know at all. But I think there's a – yeah, I mean, why not put a guy like Jelani out there who you tout his speed and he's the fastest guy in that unit and let him be responsible for, you know, taking away the run? I think that would be a smart move.
You know what's awesome about this? We'll get to find out in about one day.
Right. Definitely. That's that about wraps up the South Florida preview. Before we move on to the Gator Guarantees, one thing I do want to mention that's going on campus this weekend, in addition to football, I know there's other sports that are playing. The volleyball team, which is now ranked number 4, is that right?
Yeah.
Number 4.
No, they're like number 6, I believe.
All right, we can fact check that while this podcast goes on. But they're doing a tournament that I think they renewed for the next year. I forget how many years they're going to do. With four of the best volleyball programs in the country. It's Florida, Penn State, Stanford, and Texas. It's in Gainesville this year. They play Penn State tonight, Friday night.
Right.
The number one team in the country and really the ultimate
greatest team ever in any sport of all time.
They've won 108 straight matches.
There you go. 108 straight matches. This is like UCLA. I think Mary Wise compared them to UCLA with a young Lou Alcindor. Yeah. So that's the kind of powerhouse they're going up against tonight. Then if they win, they'll play the winner of Stanford, Texas. If they lose, they'll play the loser of Stanford, Texas on Saturday. Either way, they're playing two really good teams.
Yeah, four of the top five teams in the country are in this tournament.
That's
something you don't get in any college.
What was their ranking?
Florida's four. Stanford's number two.
And Texas is five.
Texas is number 5.
Wow. Yeah, so
getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
Just thinking about what the BCS could be.
This is honestly a really cool thing. I'm glad they put this together. I was really excited when they announced it, that it was happening last year. And Florida's problem, you know, one of their problems for all these years have been that they play in the SEC, which has been a really, really crappy volleyball conference. So these games, I think, will help them a lot in the postseason. You'll get some teams that you can go back and kind of watch video on yourself of, like, know what you did wrong against really good teams and try to improve that when the postseason rolls around.
Right, and I think what's really good with this is the fact that, I mean, what's cool is Mary Wise, the volleyball coach, is always pushing to play better teams, which you don't see that in every sport here at the University of Florida. But she says, and I think it helps the fact that she's going to make the postseason tournament no matter what, whereas, like, the football team, you mess up once, your whole season could go down the drain.
Right.
And so I think with her, it's like, okay, I don't care if we lose a couple games early on in the year. What's cool is even if we lose these games, this will make us better long term. And they haven't had a chance to do that in the past.
Yeah, I think she knows that they need these kind of tests early on in the year. As a member of the SEC, which is not the premier volleyball conference in the country. So right. I think she knows that the team needs this, and they're going to be better off for it.
And I think what's good, too, is that they went earlier in the year, they went into Nebraska and beat Nebraska on the road, which nobody does. Like, I don't know the stats and stuff, but I know it's, like, impossible. They're another really good volleyball team historically. Nobody ever goes in there and beats them on the road. So I think that's good for their confidence coming into this weekend, because had they struggled with them and got really blown out, then maybe you start to think the same thing might happen with these teams coming in here.
I even think the Gators received the number one vote in this week's poll. They've been impressive early on. You would think with the transfer of Colleen Ward and Brandon Rogers and losing at least Cusack, this would be kind of a down year after not winning the SEC last season. But a couple of transfers have really stepped up for them. Kelly Murphy, obviously, is very good.
I think that's what it's all about, honestly. Like, when I covered the team 2 years ago, Kelly Murphy was a freshman, and that was right after Angie McGinnis and Amber McCray and Marcy Hampton had just left. We were, like, three, like, legendary Florida volleyball players, and Phil had covered them. And I said, I think Kelly Murphy has a chance to be the best player that Florida's ever had by the time she leaves, and Phil laughed at me. But she's been ridiculous so far this year in her junior season. She's really, like, she's always been good her first 2 years here, but she's really got a chance to be one of the best players in the country this year, if not the best player. So I think they'll probably go as far as she can take them.
Yeah, Phil Kegler would be, that's who Phil is. He's a former Alligator Sports writer, now going to law school. Not every listener knows. You can't assume that no one didn't jump the train.
Look, man, Phil's got like 100 episodes under his belt, all
right? Right, there's some people that just jumped on, so they haven't listened to those 100 episodes yet. If you haven't, they're still in the archives. I'm telling you, there's 100 great episodes to listen to, even though it won't really apply now. And yeah, I think they did receive a number one vote. At least I hope they did, because we put that in our newspaper. So
let's hope that we were factually correct. So check out volleyball this weekend, at least monitor the results. And if they win both games this weekend, get on the volleyball train, because they may have a chance at a national championship. So with that, we'll get out of the volleyball talk and move on to our Gator Guarantees. I don't think we've done this yet since we came back for the fall, but we're just, each of us are going to, since nobody knows what happens in this podcast in the past, I'll explain it.
I'm just saying, keep it simple is the key. Simple is good.
Each one of us is going to pick one thing guaranteed to happen over the next week. Sometimes they're more long-term than that. I think all of us will come up with a short-term one. And don't bet any money on these because they're never right. But Tyler, why don't you kick us off?
My first Gator guarantee is I fell in love with Matt Elam last weekend, a freshman safety for Florida out of Dwyer High School. Really, really hype coming in. And he didn't play that much. I think he played a lot in the nickel corner spot. And of the three or four times that they tested him, he played really good defense. There's one time where a ball ended up in a Miami, Ohio player's hands in the end zone. He slapped it out. I just was really impressed with how he played. And I think this weekend with Moses Jenkins going down, he'll emerge as the nickel corner. And I think that that trend will continue where if they test him, he will continue to shut down whatever receiver he faces.
Dude, you got to give us some concrete guarantee here.
I said he's going to shut down. Everyone. Okay, we'll get an interception.
There you go. Matt Elam will get an interception.
Write it down. Take it to the bank.
We like all the Matt Elam love, but we need something we can hold you accountable for.
So. You can watch the film, bro.
My Gator guarantee will be that Deontay Thompson is going to drop at least one pass this week.
Nice.
Just because it happens every week.
Hater.
I'm just saying, like, you know, he struggles with the over-the-shoulder catch. I think, and that's what he needs to do in this offense. I think they'll put him in that position again. And I just see him dropping at least one pass this week.
Yeah, it's very important for Deontay Thompson in the University of Florida offense for him to be able to catch the football. So, agreed.
That's part of his job description. We're all of the belief that Deontay Thompson absolutely should have caught that ball last week.
Right,
a lot of people that are defending him. I think it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it was decent defense, but that's not an excuse. It was in his hands.
Hit him in the fingertips.
You have to catch the ball. He could have secured it before the guy. Like, I think he didn't secure it. It was on the way out, and then the guy knocked his arm away, and that was that. But he's got to make that catch, and, you know, these receivers really need to do a better job helping Brantley out. But anyway, all right, anybody who knows me or has been around me knows the two players I've hyped most early on in their careers on this Florida team has been Omarius Hines and Jeff Demps. Those two are kind of my boys, at least as far as playing-wise goes, not the best interviews between the two of them. But they both scored touchdowns last week, and I'm going to say they both scored touchdowns again this week. We'll see what happens. I think Demps is like a lot. He's pretty much a lock to score one. We'll see. But Omarius Hines, I don't know how involved he'll be in the offense. Hopefully as involved as he was last week, because that's my Gator guarantee.
Well, maybe with the return of Jordan Reed at tight end, he could move to the wide receiver spot and then see more time there in the passing game.
I like Hines matching up with linebackers personally. I think that's fun to watch.
Right. And yeah, but if Jordan Reed does come back and he's a guy who is a weapon for them, You have to think the wide receiver rotation is going to be better than none last week or whatever. They said that Carl Moore and Deontay were on the field for every single snap despite, you know, not really doing that much. So that has to change this week for them. But with that, as usual, send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. You can check us out on Twitter @AlligatorSports, @KMHtree, @ChangReaction, @IamTyler. Let us know anything that you think is interesting, anything you disagree with. I don't think we've read a reader email in a while, so try to hit us up after this game. We'll get it on the air next week. And with that, we're out.
End the show, Barry.